Well, I think I'd like this point.
Turn the four over to our man of the whatever, the day of the decade. And he made noises about some crazy ideas, so I'm going to give you the full opportunity.
Okay. So I just have three things that I want to ask about, and rather than do them one by one, I guess I'll just throw them all out at one time and see if any of the three of them elicits any interest. One of them, I guess, you know, I just have been wondering lately about a topic that did come up once or twice very briefly today, and that has to do with the longevity of our materials. I'm wondering what people are thinking collectively about this topic. At UK, I know that a few of us have been talking about institutional repositories lately. At one time, Jeff and I talked about more of a disciplinary repository, and I still kind of wonder whether that might be the way to go in some ways, since this is a specialized collection of material, and in some ways it makes sense to try to pull it together and keep it together for people who are interested in this area. But, you know, so there's a question there of whether one goes institution by institution or tries, again, to collect things together in more of a discipline-based fashion. And I'm just wondering about that. I don't have a take on it myself exactly, although I do feel increasingly pressured to come up with something that is reasonably reassuring about the longevity of materials that I know I've worked on and that I'd like to see stick around for a while. So that's one issue. And another one is that Chuck Jones is here from the American School, and I want to put you on the spot a little bit, I guess, because I've wondered for a long time whether the American School is sort of an underutilized resource in the kinds of buildup of digital resources that we're all interested in here. Every year there's this fresh group of students coming in, and they're pretty eager and enthusiastic. They go all around the country, and it seems like, among other things, a pretty good data collection and aggregation team. If there were appropriate guidance and leadership on a project of interest to enough of them to do that, maybe there already are such things underfoot and underway, and I just don't know about them. But I don't know. So let me just throw out the third thing as well. And that is that we've been talking about more text and text manipulation things than anything else today, though not exclusively. And I also want to put Brent on the spot and see about whether, as he's listened to us today, he's had ideas about sort of imaginative new approaches to images and visualization and virtual environments that he thinks a group like this or a discipline like ours should be pursuing in a more aggressive way than maybe we are at present. So. Those are the things that I thought I'd throw out there.
It's hard to hear because the band is going on.
I can respond a little bit about what's happening at the American School in Athens. Lots of different things are happening. The students who were there last year collectively took something between 30 and 40,000 images of archaeological sites on the cliff. There were about 20,000 images from the year.
They all come with digital cameras now and video cameras. And
I expect it to double probably next year. This is beginning to tax the storage we have there. And I've begun to talk to Tom about how we might collaborate with the communities in addition, we're in the middle now of two projects, one funded by the EU, which is to digitize and to image human corpus of material that we have, primarily the excavation data from the farm, meaning about 150,000 photographs and all of their excavation records. That's almost done now, and that will get them sort of standard with the Agarrah project, which has been digital for quite some time. So the photographic corpus of excavated objects in those two collections is 400,000 units, or will be within the next 6 months. In parallel with that, almost accidentally and almost overwhelmingly, we have a grant from the Mellon Foundation to build a prototype of an institutional repository, thinking about it as, in some ways, as non-institutional but as disciplinary, as you said earlier, with the idea that we can provide structures. This is being done primarily with the programming by Thornton Staples, with the idea that we may or may not use Fedora. It will produce a prototype of what we refer to as a shiny thing in the first week of December, which will go out locally, and then we're going to need the action. I'd like to know if I can have the team that's working on this read the papers that have been presented today. Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah. They would benefit hugely from that, because this is exactly the kind of collaboration that they want. And they're working kind of in isolation, at least in isolation in Athens, which means there's a lot of stimulation, but it's not with this group, and it should be.
Can I say something about that, about the isolation?
Yeah.
Which is that the CSS is just so big, it just has been.
Chime in on the visualization issues.
I'm interested to know if there's a unified effort in the classics to articulate what you would consider to be grand challenge problems field that would drive things forward, things that can't be accomplished right now, even if you had enough money, but would be incredibly useful to solve, and would use existing cyber infrastructure, or perhaps define how that infrastructure should need to be designed in order to solve the problem. These problems have had a huge impact in computer science because they've kind of given a focus for things to be worked on. Like, let me give you one example of the autonomous vehicle projects that began in the late 70s and now are offered as competitions by DARPA every year, have captured the imagination of younger scholars coming in and involve all kinds of technology being pulled together. And so work on that as, in terms of the individual components that play a role has really pushed a lot of things forward. And it's all around sort of solving a problem. And I look at the things that I know about in the classics, and some of the things that you've done or have imagined have hinted at that. Like the multi-text idea, which if you broaden that beyond Homer, there are many, many texts, and just the idea of variance and how to represent that, that's a fairly broad idea. And it isn't captured very well right now in the technology that we have. So the multi-text idea for something like social networks we have is another completely open problem. The evolution of, say, Facebook over time is not represented and tells us a lot about the way people are thinking and the way things are emerging. And it's a variant for us now of this multi-text problem from epochs of the past. And so I just wonder about that. I think for me, in terms of things that are related, to images and imaging, and I formulate these problems, and then I have no way to solve them, so then I start thinking, who can I round up to help me think about this problem? One of the ones I've been thinking about is surgery, how to do surgery without a camera, basically, with a lot of ways to do imaging inside the body, offline without a camera, but if you actually want to do an intervention online, you have to stick stuff inside the body and look around. So that, for me, would be that kind of a grand challenge. Basically, in terms of the classics, I wonder if you've thought about how images and cyber infrastructure in general can be wed to the things that you do, the things that are important, that can impact the economy and impact the culture, and especially the new people coming forward. We've talked a lot about changing the field and changing the center of gravity, and it's a matter of scale, really, is what that is. I think that it is changing. It's just that we see the change over 30 years, and we'd like to see the change over a shorter scale, because then it would be more meaningful to our everyday career, where we could go in and see in a year's time a bigger difference. So I guess those are some general comments.
Well, I talked a lot about cyber infrastructure and the basic services that we see, and I tend to focus on the textual side, just because that's where our emphasis has been. I think that one of the things one of the motivating ideas behind our work in Perseus 20 years ago, and it's now more than 20 years ago, was the isolation and separation of the record of material culture, poorly as it's published, hard as it is to use, from the materials, the historical literary materials. There are two separate libraries apart. And the Notre Dame books, anyway, in the Bog Library, they're never there, the pictures stink. I've never found it to be a really attractive place to work. So, in my own mind, I had this idea that people would actually have a more heterogeneous research projects, integrated categories of data. That were broader than they worked on in the past because they adapted their research to the limitations of the information that they could easily get their hands on. Now, I don't know that that change has happened in the last 20 years yet, but in fact, that's kind of what we're edging up to. Now, what are the mechanisms going to be? I mean, I think that I've not worked with Second Life, but you're starting to see these immersive environments transforming the way people think. You got a project at KCL on this that I didn't get a chance to see when I was in England a couple of weeks ago, but I'd like to have seen. But what is the role? Are we emerging to the point where creating virtual environments with rule-based or machine-actionable models of the world and of behavior becoming the primary method, or major method, maybe the primary method of disseminating information about the facts? That being the primary environment, space in which people now absorb information about other worlds. Is that what we want? What is it that we want? How do we get there? What services do we need? I think this is what Steve Griffin would like to get, is a sense of what the grand challenges are that the NSF could invest money. So
30,000 images this summer taken by students in the classes, right? And where are they? Where are those images? So that's the thing. I mean, just that alone, a lot of this work, and Casey has students who are learning how to read these impenetrable things that are from before, and then they learn that, and then how are we capturing that, right? Like, Wikipedia is like one of the most valuable things that I've found. Given Second Life and all this other stuff, I'm interested in Wikipedia, because when Casey tells me about something I've never heard of, I look it up, and it turns out that someone, either she or someone she knows, actually wrote an entry in there. And so I'm wondering if there's a way we can start to capture this stuff to really change the way the field moves and capture the work that you're already doing so that you can build on it using the infrastructure that's there.
I think one challenge we might face is that in trying to think about the grand challenges, pick up on Hugh's point, that big, complex, often especially for funding agencies, compelling kinds of things are hard to shrink down to simple things. And to think of grand challenges as something that's fundamentally at the base simple, like you were saying, I think it's going to be difficult for us.
On the flip side,
there were other people.
Well, I was going to say, I saw a little bit of, we have a lot of human intelligence going on here. Zombies and love activity, it's the intersection of machine learning and social planning, social collaboration. And I think that's the hardest thing to do that we really do with that. We know we can't even robust people do it all. If we have enough intelligence in lots of areas that would be an essential one, that what we want to do is sort of learn from not an individual small experiment, but these large collective experiments, and build that into machine learning system. I think that's where we get a lot of traction. This stuff's harder than just sort of traditional machine learning problems. That would be my main challenge.
Couple of things. With setting aside perhaps the idea of a grand challenge, maybe because we're just too timid as a discipline, but this idea of a kind of perennial challenge, like the autonomous vehicle, I think is an interesting idea. I mean, in part, just to make ourselves part of the community. Why not a $3,000, award for the classic student who produces the best, and we could say, visualization of EpiDoc, and just suddenly you're giving students a reason to look into this stuff and they take a whack at it.
But you're saying not just one time, but the classic setup for grand challenges every year, people come together and assess where they are now. I mean, now some of these things like information retrieval evaluations or machine translation evaluations, they come up with objective metrics or are flawed, or perhaps they have, they hire human evaluators to look at various systems. Is that too restrictive of a paradigm for some of the tasks that people here are interested in? If it's doing good analysis of group morphologies in text, probably not. But if it's extracting information from images of coins. I'm not so sure.
I'm worried about some of the direction you're going, because the analogy that I think is something that your average undergraduate student in computing science and or engineering or both could get together and put some sort of credible application in for, maybe graduate student. And since the average student or interested student in our group is not going to be on top of all computational ways, but maybe we could produce something that gets them into this world. It gets them.
It doesn't have to be the same kind of evaluation, but I think an important thing that you can take away from these kinds of challenges is that people come back every year and they're forced to see everybody else's work and see where all the good ideas are. Now, the downside of that is, after a couple of years, everybody can sort of converge, and there can be a loss of diversity.
They drop in and pick up a new topic.
Right.
Well, a different model for a similar kind of thing is to have a list of things that everybody knows about, everybody's working on. Oh, this has been important in mathematics. I'm thinking about the lecture that Hilbert gave at the very beginning of the 20th century, laying out a list of very important problems which the mathematical community has been pegging away at for 100 years. Yeah. And then more recently, the Mathematics Foundation has put together a challenge with humongous prizes for solving a small number of high-profile problems. I don't know whether we have such obvious high-profile seminal problems, but you could argue that everything that's happened in mathematics in the last 20 years has been pushed towards a solution of one or another of the problems on the Hilbert list or the Clay list, which don't neither is a subset of the other. I don't know whether we have problems like that, but if somebody had a list, what we want, or what Hilbert wasn't even trying to speak for the discipline, it was just, here's the things that I think are cool. And everybody picked it up and ran with it.
Name?
Is there one other scale I should have played into this, but compared to electrical engineering and computer science, we are very tiny. And I like the idea of sort of trying to pick out as a group grand challenges or continuing problems is appealing to me, but I wonder if at what point do you get such a small group that you actually need to consider, maybe we just want to let everybody just scatter and do something different because we are too few in number to have lots of people working on the same thing. We don't have the resources to throw everybody at a grand challenge because that will take everything else.
The flip side of that is then, but if everyone knows what everyone else is working on, you can interface that.
I think a thing that ought to be on the candidate list, touches on actually several things that people are doing. Is this business of images, the modeling of physical culture, whether you're talking about objects or built structures or landscapes, and
or miniatures?
Shrink or spans, but we can count lots of classics departments in the last decade. We've gone, we need to get the slide library digitized. And something's been done. Ross set up an instance of gallery and some of his banks and images in there. You got, tens of thousands of images, and it's a rising wave. And we all know this stuff could be useful. We all know it's a way to take our students there or bring it to them, whether it's a coin or a space or whatever. But it's not happening. Meanwhile, out in the bigger world, there are people who are looking at being able to drive down the street with a sensor and boom, we have some kind of triangulated model and texture painted on it. We've got people who are working for the big search operations trying to figure out how to automatically siphon images off of Flickr and make them be in the right place in the world and paste it onto a model. We could benefit a lot from that work if we were somehow integrated in the process. We have a very interesting batch of stuff on all kinds of different scales that could be used. Some of this
really distinctive. Some of it's really very non-distinctive. It's a pile of rocks or whatever. So there's a whole batch of all sorts of image recognition problems and dealing with large masses of material and so on that we could offer up to a community, a computing community outside of ours for collaborative work in this area. I mean, that's one possible, and one that might give us access to kinds of money, frankly, that would not deplete our more traditional sources for the range of work that still needs to go on.
I think that's not dissimilar to the conversation that's going on with Google, where, you know, they have, there's a certain level they can get to, but there's that last mile problem, which is where the disciplines come in. And this kind of, with the industrial relationship, you've got to figure out how not to get stepped on. Now, there are three players in operation right now. There's, you know, the Googles, the Microsofts, the Yahoos. There's the institutions, there's the libraries, really, and they're the fits and starts of institutional repositories, which don't do much yet. And then there's the individual projects, like those supported by the Stowe or by us, or Pleiades. And it's not clear how these are all going to play out. Now, it's pretty clear that the faculty projects or the academic projects will be cutting edge and lead the way and do new things. I think it's pretty clear that the libraries will take over long-term custodianship of the content, and that the Googles and so on will provide humongous infrastructure, will upload and analyze a lot of the data that we assemble and provide basic services. But when you get into the details, it's not clear. Now, the big issue I think about isn't really academic per se. When I talk to libraries, as I often do, I say, how many books do you have? How many books do you think Google has digitized now? It was over 2 million. But they won't tell you, but we were able to sat down with a computer scientist and we estimated at least 2 million last April. So it's probably 3 million, 4 million. How many libraries are that big? Now, you can't see it all for legal reasons, but how long is that going to last before some kind of agreement comes up? That's copyright law is there to generate money. And what's going to happen if and when you have the ability to actually disseminate what's being assembled right now to the organization of information in this country. So you have real challenges. What's going to happen to the million book libraries, physical libraries, if everybody gets everything on their desktop? And the cost benefit of having that space as a repository of books, as opposed to a learning space, becomes very complex. And you ever seen Michigan in its 5-year plan, says in 5 years, they said last year, when you come to the library, there'll be fewer books, and there'll be more of a learning space. So what does that mean for us? And what are the opportunities? What is it that we care about? What do we want classics to look like, say, in 10 years? What are the intellectual operations that we would like to see enabled? And what does our world look like? I found you sort of did some of that in your paper. So I've been at this thing for 25 years. It was 1982 in the summer that I started working on this digital stuff. And so, I wonder in 25 years what things would be like. And I tend to think that we are finishing the incunabula stage, by which I mean, we are finishing the stage where people use technology to keep doing the same goddamn thing and shoehorning things into the old forms, i.e. the PDF world. And you're starting to see now, what happens then is that this new set of tools which were solving old problems starts to hollow out the ground underneath the old environment that really collapses. And that's like Wikipedia, probably the most important thing so far in the 21st century, because it's a new mode of intellectual production. For all of its faults, and something that I was trained to think was impossible. So one audience we have is the National Science Foundation. They paid for this. So are there really wild, the more we can think about what we would do, what we would like to have happen, the crazier it is, the more likely it is that we'd be able to get something appealing to somebody's funding call. Now, these aren't questions we have to answer today, but they're questions we should think about.
And underlying that set of comments is the idea that simply saying doing these projects and making them work together is not going to be appealing. Is that fair?
Which projects?
What we've just discussed.
I'm not sure. The cyber infrastructure stuff is we're describing cyber infrastructure. Now, whether the NSF would see it as... So, NSF funds something sort of service-oriented, because they see it as sort of research-oriented. The National Science Digital Library is about services, but size, computer information science engineering, what's the, I can't remember what the E stands for, but the computer science directorate wants to fund research. So, it's not clear, all of what we talked about is fundamental to the classes and the humanities. How much it pushes the envelope of what would be recognized as research in computer science and the national NSF is another question. What are the things that we're pushing at that would push that envelope is another question. What are the things that we're looking at? So I don't know. What are...
I'm curious, how much primary material is there from the period that you would consider of interest?
By in textual materials, it's per se, it's tiny. You know, if you have probably a couple hundred million words, assuming you only can think about, I can only identify 100 million or so right now, but hundreds of millions of words. So I personally digitized 50, like 100 million words myself. So it's not a lot of stuff. And it's worked on intensively. It's like a genome rather than...
Like, when are you going to get to the point where you can say everything we know about primary materials from this period is...
Right. At some point it gets harder because you move more and more into the kind of area where Jeff's working, and then there are things that have no good modern edition at all.
And there are also the things that we don't publish, right? Like manuscripts that we don't really publish.
Right.
And so one of the questions is the multi-textual project illustration. We can... use this technology to do things that in the print world were just out of bounds. We just didn't do that kind of stuff. So we can't look at the print record as a kind of inventory of what we deal with. We have to...
And what we should be dealing with going forward. I mean, if the critical edition is dead, then what happens to the letters of Libanius that have never seen an edition or a translation? What happens to all this other stuff that's kind of out there in manuscripts or in early printed books that is just not being accessed? That stuff matters, and we're at the moment where it either recedes further or finds a new avatar representation or bridge into the future.
I mean, one thing about the Human Genome Project that was nice is that it has a goal and a limit, and you can say that the first order goal is to just map it. And it's going to be this big, and we'll know when we're done.
NSF likes evaluation. You'll be able to say, it's 50% faster. It'd
be interesting if you could say, this is the primary material we know about, and it will take this much space to store it in some form. There is secondary material. We will continue to generate that, and we'll have a way to store it, but we'll know when we're done. It'll be this big, and this is what we know. And unless they excavate Herculaneum or something else, that's what you know about in primary source.
Yeah, but this is what does it take for the discipline to produce that evaluation? I mean, that, can classics, I mean, maybe in this room you can't say, but could classics in a year answer this question? How much is out there?
Depends. I mean, the best source, of course, is giant. I always talk about the Millennium Book Library problem, and that's kind of like our first best published record, things in books. It's the primary material, and it's out there, and it's kind of a non-tractable issue. But then there are other categories of data. Neil always brings up the manuscripts, which are, don't lend themselves right away to automatic analysis. So if you have a decent text of Homer, what would it take then to be able to align and compare that text of Homer, identify the text of Homer inside Menander's A? So if you have, you know, sort of, you know, most of what you should find, you could probably figure out.
Right, it's a noisy one.
And what? But then, how well? You know, at what point can you be able to align these things? Figure out which collate the managements, compare, find, you know, distinguish errors in data entry or an OCR from intentional or differences that may actually be errors, intellectual errors. But that's just one category. The other, another category in terms of material culture, just assembling all the damn data.
Yeah.
Now that's a social problem. As much as anything, getting people to organize themselves and make available the data in a computationally accessible fashion. Because, of course, data mining and visualization are the only, are the foundational tools for all archaeology, not that anyone actually acts on that. But it's not going to be viewed as serious discipline until it organizes its database. It's going to be viewed as an antiquarian exercise.
It also means defining what are the boundaries of classics. Linear B tablets, do those kind of speed text? How about linear A tablets? Those kind of ish, sort of text-ish.
Also, there's still so many barriers to access to requirements. Like text, there's no problem. You can get text online. But as soon as it's like a vase or a stone or something else, there's all these, it seems like there's so many barriers in the way. Because the museums and the people that take the picture and the everything else, I mean.
That's another challenge, though, that can be articulated if you have a way to catch that information.
Yeah.
Once you break down the barrier.
Like some museums and or a Teasley Archive or something like that, you know, they have all these images and nobody can see them.
I saw some of them once. And I remember a few of those, so that's something.
Tell us about them.
Okay.
Now, don't you be cracking on my pal, Tom. Well, it's a catch-22. Our primary sources are what we work on, because we work on the stuff we can work on. So the many of us say nobody worked on in Sat and Mulder because it wasn't really accessible. A lot of these things don't get worked on because of logistical issues. The real question is what happens when you remove, A, logistical issues, the stuff that you understand, and you can actually get moved through this space more rapidly. The other issue is what happens when you have a new space. So, like, you know, you would have, like, a second life, where your archaeologists are reconstructions or models of the space as they conceive it to have existed. And it then is experienced in a different way. But then what are your parameters? You spend your time getting incredibly precise measurements of every rock, or are you just having, this is pretty variable stuff, so it doesn't matter what to some extent. You just have approximation models and populate space with your generic buildings or structures that would exist. I don't know. What are we building? To me, it's about, it's sort of the same thing that Google thinks about. It's trying to, given who you are and what you know, what you want to do at the moment, how do you deploy everything in the universe that is known for you in a way that you can understand it? So you can walk around this place here, and you're interested in whiskey, you ought to be able to find out about it. You're interested in economic history, you might find out what's interesting here. You're interested in prohibition, and there are different elements of the history of this space in which we're meeting that are available in dispersed places. You want to have that as you're in the space, so or anywhere. But you might want to have it, take your library with you. So the ubiquitous research library is huge, but that once it's not only ubiquitous, but it's personalize and customize. And I'm not sure there's much else than that in terms of that kind of, that's a huge broad rubric that fits a lot of stuff. And obviously, to me, I think the language problem is fundamentally the biggest one, the coolest one, because that's what I work on. So better ways of understanding linguistic systems, and being able to deal with 100 languages, or even understand Greek groups. Would be kind of cool.
All right, I need to draw an analogy. Archaeologists may not want to spend all their time producing reconstructions, because that's not really the thing itself. And in the same way, it's not saying that, you know, in order to really understand Homer, you need to make a translation of him. Well, that's not the thing itself, but in a way, sort of going out on a limb.
Well, is reconstruction the same thing as a translation?
It's not the same thing. It's the same sort of trade-off between, well, you need to have this completest interpretation in order to produce a reconstruction or a translation. You could study it you could study it pretty well without producing it, but it's one way of keeping yourself honest that, you know, you're taking a stand.
Don, what is our schedule?
We have a group for 4:30.
Okay. There was a van, but I think it's for that set of tours. So I have a question. Is anyone here who would like to, who has moved to write a paper who has not so written yet? I know Helma wants to.
And we all want to.
I feel like I need to contribute something to this, but I'm not sure what it is. What I'm likely to contribute. I'm working with a couple of ideas here. Our problem with the imaging projects is not cyber structure, but it's hardware. How we're going to store this stuff? If we go out and collect, 100 gigabytes of data per week when we're working, how do we convince the library when we go back home that they need to archive it all? That sort of thing. But that's not. That's a problem that someone else can solve. This group doesn't need to think on those terms. We're trying to accelerate our process so that we can capture more data more quickly. But it still comes out to, each image that we get of a sheet of damaged papyrus is an analog that we can then deal with. I don't know whether we can ever get to the point where we can get OCR to look at one of the individual bookends from Herculaneum and have it create a document out of that. I think there still has to be, at least in my mind, there has to be human intervention between the capture of the image and the creation of some sort of text that can then be digitized.
Doc?
Well, maybe Melissa Terrace is here. Because she's really going to teach. But every time people start talking about OCR on ancient texts, I think about a book that she just recently wrote about the Netherlands project. Mm-hmm. And they did this work. I don't know how many of you have read this book. It's really fantastic. You should read it. But this group worked for a long time to come up with a system for helping paleographers, I guess, or I don't know that's the word that she used, but helping them read these texts. So not these in particular, but I remember when I was at the conference recently where I met you, Roger, and that was really the first time that I'd seen these little scrolls, but it reminded me so much of these texts that the Vinland probably worked on, which is basically little pieces of bark, I guess, with scratches on them that are very, very difficult to make out. But I wonder if the sort of thing that they've done in that project could be applied to these other sorts of things, not only the pottery, but maybe physically, if you have stone, anything like this. And so, maybe the work that she's done, first of all, maybe I can volunteer her to write an article for this question. But that is the kind of thing, because it's not automatic, and it shouldn't be automatic, because you still need people to figure out what it is that these things are saying. But if you can have this kind of system to help, something, and maybe even you can start there, but working beyond that, and saying, okay, maybe we can't do everything automatically, but what do we need to have done, and how can we come up with cyber infrastructure to help yourself?
It's conceivable because there's a certain regularity, even though there's always a unique feature in an epigraphic letter shape or set of letter shapes. That's a solvable problem. The manuscript problem seems utterly intractable to me. There are, I think it's 28 different book hands that are acknowledged in the Herculaneum Papyri now by Cavallo. Each one is, going to be groupable into, you put them in different pots, but still there will be unique features, and then that's always complicated. But even that is not even as challenging as what they've worked out with Vindolanda, because everything there is complicated by multi. It's all almost palimpsesting the scratches in these tablets.
Question: Brent might be able to comment on it, but just related to images and image recognition and image matching and real world geography. I don't know how many have seen the demo of this software called PhotoSynth that Microsoft is about the company to develop, but it's this mind-boggling software that is culled images smaller than the internet and basically kind of mapped them in the world by, I gather, essentially just sort of the image recognition. And they just sort of built up a kind of image texture of the globe, or at least parts of it, and it's absolutely astonishing because you can go into periods. They did one demo where every page of a printed edition of something like Jane Eyre or something was one little image, and then just in real time you can zoom down and see a single period on a single page or back and forth. And the real world matching stuff was astonishing because you could find a gargoyle on a tower of Notre Dame and you're in Paris on the globe, and it's I've never seen anything like it. But I didn't know if that's what resonated with me is that it's a piece of software that's using the sort of images that people just collect and put on Flickr, and it was mining that stuff to create a sort of real world model, and it interests me because we spend a lot of time in the real world doing things like collecting images. And if we were thinking about grand challenge things that require a lot of technology that we are not connected with or involved with, it seems to me that what we are good at is adding the content of various sorts to the various objects that are appearing in this geomapped image mosaic of the world. I don't know if that's it. I'm not articulating this at all well, but if taking resources like what American school students just collect in the course of their work, or what people have assembled as library collections, and if we were thinking about immersive environments rather than created artificial ones, what if an immersive environment were a kind of mosaic of what we've done, where we've been, and we were thinking about ways to attach to the geography of that model everything from a on-spot object, text, or a point, or attach other kinds of objects to it. For me, people should check YouTube for PhotoSynth. If you haven't seen that, because it will